Current Affairs. This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a special discussion on World Mental Health Day, Mental Wellness, a Modern Day Necessity. The participants are Dr. Sandeep Vora and Dr. Bhavuk Garg, Senior Psychiatrists. Moderator is Tina Jha, Journalist.
October 10th marks World Mental Health Day, a global occasion to raise awareness, inspire action, and reaffirm that there is no health without mental health. The day brings together stakeholders across sectors to strengthen understanding, advocacy, and access to care for all. This year's theme, Access to Services, Mental Health in Catastrophes and Emergencies, highlights the urgent need to support the psychological well-being of people affected by conflicts, disasters, and public health crises. Studies show that 1 in 5 individuals in such situations experience a mental health condition. Emphasizing the importance of compassion and open dialogue, Prime Minister Narendra Modi has said that in today's fast-paced world, World Mental Health Day reminds us to reflect, empathize, and create spaces where conversations on mental health are normalized. To discuss how we can strengthen awareness and promote mental well-being, we are joined by two distinguished guests. I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Sandeep Vora and Dr. Bhavuk Garg on the program today. So, Dr. Vora, let's begin the conversation today with you on this very, very timely and pertinent issue that is World Mental Health Day and the importance of mental well-being. The Prime Minister has also underlined the importance of mental health and especially to normalize conversations around mental health issues. To begin with, how do you assess the current state of mental health awareness in our country?
Mental health awareness now is definitely increasing. And what has happened is that pandemic, post-pandemic, now people have become more aware, younger generation especially, there is more talk going on, especially in social media. Awareness is increasing, but there is a lot of desire to increase awareness. And getting to know about the basics is important on one hand, but acting on those thoughts or acting on what you know is more important. Awareness is first step towards getting all the citizens of the country the access to mental health needs if they have a problem.
Dr. Garg, we often hear the phrase that there is no health without mental health. From your perspective, how closely are mental health and physical health intertwined? And when we talk about awareness, are people in the country aware of why it's important not just to keep healthy physically but mentally perhaps more important?
So, a very, very pertinent question, and I would say that mental health and physical health are very closely linked to each other. They are two sides of the same coin. So, any issue with the mental health can lead to worsening of physical health issues, and any physical health issues can lead to mental health issues. So, if a person has, say, prolonged physical health issue like diabetes and hypertension, it is seen that these individuals have higher rates of mental health issues like depression and anxiety disorders, and there are certain biological factors related to it, changes in the hormones, changes in certain chemicals in the brain, which leads to the physical health issue leading to a mental health issue. Similarly, if a person has a mental health issue, their control of physical health issue becomes haywire also. For example, a person having both diabetes and depression, they are seen to have poorer control of blood sugar. If they have hypertension, poorer control of blood pressure. And improvement of mental health issue leads to improvement of physical health and vice versa. So very, very closely linked. And now, in fact, many of the bases or the causes behind mental health issues have been found to have very significant commonalities with physical health issues. Similar pathways which lead to diabetes, just insulin resistance is a very common pathway. Insulin stops working in the body. So insulin resistance is known to lead to diabetes as well as depression. The common pathways leading to both physical and mental health issues. So it's important to look at both the things together. Secondly, regarding the awareness question that you asked, awareness has increased, but it's something that we see in urban areas, in rural areas still, or in non-metro cities, there's still a huge stigma related to mental health. So people still find that the conversations about mental health are still not normal. But we're very fortunate that when the Prime Minister of the country talks about these issues and it goes to every person in the country, so such attempts leads to increased awareness regarding in terms of mental health. And around 2 years, 3 years back on the Mental Health Day, the National Telemental Health Program, Telemanas, was launched. So we have a national toll-free number, 14416, which is available 24/7 in various regional languages, more than 20 languages. And one can access mental health support anytime, anywhere in the country. And now there is a mobile application for this as well, completely government and under the National Mental Health Program.
Sure, that's been quite remarkable. And then, Dr. Vohra, trying to understand from you, what are some of the most common type of mental health issues that prevail? And especially in context of, say, the children, if I would like to understand, in today's fast-paced world, like the Prime Minister asserted, there are different kinds of mental health issues that we are dealing with, perhaps that a lot of us are not even aware of. So if I first talk about the children age group, the children and the adolescents, what are some of the common mental health issues that they or their parents can keep track of?
The commonest problems we encounter as clinicians are anxiety and depression. These are the commonest things. And in children, you can have these two as the most commonly seen ailments. Many times the children will not be exhibiting all the symptoms fully of anxiety or depression. They can have symptoms in the form of inability to concentrate, lack of interest in studies or decreased academic grades or irritability. But we have to understand that anxiety and depression, if we are able to understand that the child is anxious or the child has depression at the earliest possible stage, these symptoms are totally reversible in the beginning. But if you don't understand, you miss it, or you prolong it, or you just because of social taboo do not go to the doctor, then it can take a serious toll in the form of extreme anxiety leading to the student totally avoiding studying, not going to the school, or extreme depression leading to unfortunate incidents that, as we keep on hearing, the latest data also shows that the number of student suicides are increasing, 86% increase over the last 10 years, NCRB data latest. So the more the parents are aware, the teachers are aware, the school administration is aware of the fact that mental health issues are cropping up and the children have to be handled in a very nice manner so that they understand that they are not somehow, because of taboo, not neglected, or the symptoms are not worsened. So these are the symptoms which we commonly see, but other symptoms, for example, obsessions, obsessive compulsive disorder, or in very severe cases, we see psychosis also. Besides this, these are the clinical symptoms which we see for a person, for a child who is otherwise does not have any other underlying disorder. But some of the children have underlying undetected disorders like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or they have learning disabilities. So these are usually missed. So in the schools, you tend to see that if the child is not performing, he is either scolded by the parents or the teachers, or is somehow isolated in the school or at home. But the underlying reason, if you go thoroughly and see and check the mental health of the first child, then you will have ADHD or LD like that. So all these things, the more we are aware about what children can have, the developmental disorder, the clinical disorder, the better it is for us. It becomes for all the students of the country to get the best optimized brain they have, which God has given.
Dr. Garg, how much of this would you attribute to pressures which perhaps the children of today are facing more than what perhaps maybe say you and I did when we were kids? For example, in terms of academic stress, there is social media exposure in today's world, people, the kind of lifestyle that the others have. So there is, of course, a lot of comparison. There is also cyberbullying, but also the changing family dynamics. How are these factors impacting the minds of the little ones and impacting their mental well-being?
So there are two aspects. So one is the pressure that the person is facing, and second is the resilience, the resistance or the ability of the person to, you know, face this pressure in a very coping manner. Like you said, the pressure is increasing. I would say that pressure was there in the previous times also, but the source of pressure has changed significantly. The social media, the changing family dynamics, the peer pressure, children getting exposed to various things in very early age, right? So pressure has definitely increased, but somehow the resilience levels have also gone down. So earlier you'll have, and the buffer. So earlier we would have larger families, joint family setup. So there would be someone to buffer you when you'll be going through some kind of an issue. You would have someone to listen to. You'll find someone to have a conversation. You would find that safe space that the Prime Minister was talking about, where you could share your issues, share your concerns, get some advice. And you would not need to go to a therapist or a psychiatrist. You will have someone at home who will be able to provide that first-hand therapy, or what we call a psychological first aid. Again, somewhere, smaller families, parents becoming overprotective, holding hands of children at every step. I see in my children's school also, and otherwise also, many teachers who come to me and interact with me, they tell me that, you know, if we say something to the child, the parents would come and have a fight with us that how dare you say something to my child. So somehow the environment that the child is growing up is not partially not making them resilient, and by providing this bubble around the growing child, we are somehow, I think, missing the point and not letting them become resilient to face the pressure.
So how can we encourage more and more conversations around this without the kids having been judged. Before we, you know, allow you to answer that, Dr. Vora, let's listen to what the Prime Minister had to say, especially in context of that safe space and that perhaps one person in the family who the kids can confide in when they're not feeling too well or when they want to share their issues. So as, you know, Dr. Garg mentioned, there is that distance that perhaps didn't prevail while we were young, but which has come because of the changing dynamics, especially in context of families. So let's listen to what the Prime Minister had to say about this.
ये मुसीबत शुरू कहाँ से होती है? धीरे धीरे आपने देखा होगा घर में कोई बात करता था अच्छा नहीं लगता. पहले अपने छोटे भाई से बहुत गप्पे मारते थे.
yes, sir.
जी सर. ये सर खा रहा.
yes,
जाओ तुम जाओ. पहले दौड़ करके स्कूल से आते थे. स्कूल में जो हुआ सब मम्मा को बता देते थे.
yes, sir.
और मम्मा को नहीं बताते मन क्या चल आ गए किताब थोड़ी देर लिया छोड़ दिया. ये बिहेवियर आपको देखा होगा धीरे 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 अपने आप को कट करता जाता है सिकुड़ता जाता है और धीरे धीरे फिर वो डिप्रेशन में चला जाता है. आपको कोशिश करनी चाहिए आपके मन के अंदर जो दुविधाएं हैं बिना संकोच खुल करके किसी को कहना चाहिए. अगर नहीं कहेंगे मन में भर करके रखोगे तो धीरे धीरे बड़ा विस्फोट हो जाएगा.
So, Dr. Vora, what do you think? How can we normalize or encourage conversations with kids who are dealing with issues of anxiety, with depression, without judging them? I think because children of that age, school-going children, even college-going teenagers, have that fear that their parents, their teachers, their family members, their peer groups will judge them if they're dealing with any sort of mental issue. And that's why they don't prefer to confide in people. And that's, I think, the biggest gap that we are seeing today.
It's very important for the parents to have a very healthy communication with their children. It's very important for them to encourage their children to speak about what is coming to their mind instead of putting the pressure off you and telling them if your marks are not good, then you will have it. This is what happens, immediate reaction. So instead of this, if you tell the children that, okay, when I was in class 8th, 9th, I also had anxiety. If you start like this, look at the response of the child will feel, okay, so this is not something abnormal. This is not something which is happening to me.
Right.
My father or my mother also had this. So the more you make it a normal phenomena of anybody who's growing up, who's passing through this academic stream in which he or she has to pass various classes, it's very normal for anybody to have anxiety. And the more it is reflected, the more it is conveyed to them, easier it becomes for them to A, understand that it is something normal. B, they can open up more. And the same applies to the teachers of any class. If they just come and just talk to the person, the child who's stopping and encourage or just praise about him in front of other children saying that oh, he or she is the one who's the most serious or that other children, they tend to feel that they are inferior or they don't open up or they rather go in the opposite direction of rebelling in one way or the other. So I think, and it's a fact, all of us have passed through anxiety. It is not that we in our younger days did not have anxiety. All of us tend to have anxiety. So anxiety, when it becomes pathological, is the one when you have to go to the doctor. So it's important for us to understand the difference between eustress and distress. Eustress is, tomorrow I have exam, I must have little bit of anxiety, which is normal, non-pathological, and we call it eustress, so that I open up the book and with concentration study, so that I can appear in tomorrow's exam. But for the same exam, I become so anxious that I start experiencing restlessness or sweating or tremors or palpitation, my mouth is dry, or I become insomniac and I am unable to concentrate and I'm so down with confidence that I don't go to the school tomorrow, is what is pathological anxiety. That is distress. So eustress is little bit of stress is required, little bit of push is required for you to do something for the next day or for exam. So the more we understand that pathological anxiety or something which is more than normal requires help, easier it becomes for all of us to handle it. So the parents should know that it is very important for them to make it very normal for the child, to make child understand that, okay, little bit of tension is acceptable. Another point I wanted to add, the most important factors which I see, why is that resilience is decreasing, why is the children becoming more anxious, depressed, is their lifestyle in which they are sleeping less and using technology more. So imagine what is the required sleep from as per the guidelines for somebody from 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 years old, it is 8 to 12 hours. And ask anybody, any child who sleeps 8 hours, 12 hours is, you know, just far-fetched. So the less we sleep, the more we are predisposing to all sorts of anxiety or depression-related instances. One is this. The second is excessive use of social media. On one hand, we are depriving ourselves by decreasing our own homeostasis by not sleeping well. On the other hand, we are using excessive social media. So there was a recent study in Canadian Journal in which around 350 adolescents were examined, and out of them 49% had anxiety or depression for the first time in their life because they were using too much of social media. So excessive use of social media is one of the reasons, and decreased sleep. These two are the cornerstones which I feel in my clinical practice are the most important reasons for everybody, all the children feeling what their parents never felt.
So technology is a double-edged sword. Absolutely. While it's made our lives so much easier, Dr. Garg, it's something that we as parents need to be sensitized about, need to be aware about how much technology should be made accessible to children, at what age, and how much access to social media is something that we need to do. But in terms of creating that ecosystem that we were talking about how to normalize conversations with children who are dealing with anxiety, depression, first as parents, because often what parents do in our country is that we judge children dealing with such issues as maybe say mood swings or maybe attention issues. We are not treating it as something for which maybe we need to seek clinical help at times when it gets worse. But also, even if we do, even if as parents we are aware and we are doing what we can in the best of our capacities, it does not extend to the larger school or the community level. So it has to happen at multiple levels. What kind of initiatives or efforts have we undertaken in our country to deal with issues like this?
It's very important to have very clear channels of communication and encourage a good communication practice and a good communication pattern with the child. You cannot, very commonly we see that, you know, parents or the teachers, they say that in our times we used to face this, in our times we were able to do this. It has to be normalized, like Dr. Bora mentioned, that we also faced these issues, we also went through these issues, let's discuss what you are feeling. So having that very clear channel of communication with the child is something very important, and not sermonizing. That's something that we as parents very frequently do. We tend to pass sermons that do this, do that, move out, go play, enjoy life, you'll get better. So this is not the way. You have to understand the reason behind it. So this is at the level of the parents that one can do. Regarding at the level of what the system or the government is doing about it, so we have what we call as the National Mental Health Program in our country, and under which we have a District Mental Health Program. So under the District Mental Health Program, mental health services are being provided right at the level of the district hospitals. It's now approved in 767 districts across the country, where a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and a social worker and a psychiatric nurse are available to provide services, and they are trained to provide mental health services to children as well.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, at the level of primary healthcare itself, primary healthcare is the lowest level of healthcare, the most accessible level of the healthcare that the country has. At the level of sub-centers and primary health centers, they have been now upgraded to what we call as Ayushman Arogya Mandis, AAMs. So even at the level of Ayushman Arogya Mandis, mental, neurological, and substance use disorder-related services are being provided, especially in terms of screening, identification, and appropriate referrals to the higher level whenever it needs escalation. In addition to this, like I mentioned, the TeleManas, the National Telemental Health Program, 14416, that number is accessible to each and every person who wants to seek mental health support. So this is from the specifically the mental health side of the government. So in addition to this, there are certain other programs, Rashtriya Kishor Swasthya Karyakram, Rashtriya Bal Swasthya Karyakram, which the government is running, under which mental health support to children are being provided. We do have a school mental health program as well, in which conversations about mental health are being normalized. Sessions are being conducted across different schools, both by the health department as well as the education department, the education sector. CBSE has taken multiple initiatives to again have certain modules for mental health of school children, about technology, normalizing conversations about mental health, as well as they run certain helplines as well near the exam times we have all seen. And our Prime Minister during the program on Pariksha Pe Charcha and Man Ki Baat also touched upon this, that during the exam time, the children do go through significant mental health issue, and the result time is also a difficult time. So CBSE does run certain helpline to provide accessibility to mental health support during those times.
In fact, before we proceed in the program, let's listen into what the Prime Minister said about timely emotional and psychological care, especially in context of the children dealing with mental health issues.
अपनी स्थिति से अतिरिक्त ऐसी बहुत सी चीजें होती हैं जिसको उसे मैनेज करना पड़ता है, जो उसने सोचा नहीं वैसी चीजें व्यक्तिगत जीवन में भी आ जाती है, परिवार जीवन में आ जाती है। अब एक नेचर ऐसा होता है कि भाई बहुत बड़ी आंधी आई है, चलो कुछ पल बैठ जाए, निकल जाने दो, कुछ संकट आया है, नीची मुंडी करो यार, समय जाएगा। शायद ऐसे लोग जीवन में कुछ अचीव नहीं कर सकते। मेरी प्रकृति है, और जो मुझे काफी उपकारक लगी है, मैं हर चुनौती को चुनौती देता हूं।
Dr. Vorab, an increasing number of elderly people in our country are now living in isolation because of multiple issues. Perhaps children are staying abroad or they're living in other cities. So migration is one factor, but there could be other contributing factors as well. So there is a life of, say, loss, isolation, leading lonely lives. In a group of that kind of people, how serious are the mental health issues and what kind of progress have been made in identifying those issues among that group of population?
What is happening is that longevity is increasing, so we have more and more of elderly population now. But as you mentioned that there is, because of the changing dynamics, more and more people are living alone and their children are settled abroad or separate away from them. We are seeing lots of such cases in which there is anxiety, depression. Another factor which is added in such cases is that there are multiple physical problems in that age group. So on one hand, you are lonely. Other hand, you are having high blood pressure, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, or heart-related conditions, or obesity, or joint pain. So all these things together put double pressure or multiple areas from on their body, they have this pressure. So anxiety and depression is very common. Plus, as age advances, you tend to lose sleep. So this is another factor. So you see the physiological and age-related changes in the body, plus the fact that people around them are decreasing, moving away from them. Another factor which happens in such cases is age-related decline, which is known as dementia. So anxiety, depression, loneliness, and dementia, these are all these factors which they have to face or they are facing. I would say elderly population, it depends on their next generation or they themselves are how much aware they are that these things, these all issues, especially the clinical aspect of mental health or physical aspect, is treatable. So as if you ask me, I get patients of all age groups as old as 94, 95, but it is their children who bring them to us. Many times they come to us when they are very severely sick, in which they have become disoriented, they are forgetting, or they have moved, they have lost their way, they were found by police. So it's very important for us to understand that old age means multiple challenges. So the more support the family gives or the community gives, easier it becomes for them to navigate all this.
In fact, that brings me to the next question to you, Mr. Garg, that as Dr. Vora pointed out, loneliness, depression, also issues of dementia in the elderly often go unnoticed. So patients who are coming to him, they're coming at a very, very advanced stage of illness. What are we doing in terms of creating perhaps a system wherein we can take care of them? And also sensitize or make families more supportive, more aware of what's happening with the elderly and how they can be treated?
And I think it needs lots of awareness sessions and you know, as the life expectancy is increasing in the country, so are the mental health issues. See, there's something that needs to be done right at the level of school as well. While during the, we as mental health professionals, we as psychiatrists do advocate that mental health curriculum should be an integral part of school curriculum. So right from the school level, the children should be sensitized about mental health issues, mental health needs, that gradually when people in their family become elder and they go through certain issues, so it becomes the responsibility of the family as well as the community to take care of them. It's not just left to the system who can, in our country, with sheer numbers, it's very difficult that system can take care of everything.
So what role do you suggest the community leaders, community health workers, especially in the rural areas, can play in addressing the emotional needs of this vulnerable group of people?
So one thing is that having regular awareness sessions, some information, education and communication sessions in the community itself, right at the community, to have discussions about that, yes, mental health issues can take place in the elderly and certain behaviors. So many a times families, they neglect or ignore the elder person in the family that he's behaving like this, his age has come now and, you know, he'll only behave like this. So recognizing that this can be a manifest, these behavioral manifestations can be a part of an underlying mental health issue, which can be treated and which can be improved with treatment, medications or therapy. So giving awareness that, yes, these behavioral changes can be a part of a mental health issue, and then identifying them and appropriately referring them to the authorities, to the psychiatrist or the neurologist, to take care of them. The dementia, for example, in dementia, we frequently have behavioral problems. The person starts becoming suspicious, starts behaving aggressively, feels that people are stealing things from him. So these all symptoms can be managed and the person can become better. And even the family and the coherence within the family can get better once their symptoms are managed.
It all comes to sensitization and spreading awareness. And in this context, what's been remarkable over the last few years is that we've seen quite a number of prominent figures, public figures like the Prime Minister, who's so popular also, and other popular figures also coming out, talking about issues of mental health, trying to normalize conversations around these. How significant do you think it's a step, especially reduce the stigma attached to issues of
mental
health?
Tell me, any leader in the world, unlike our Prime Minister, who has ever spoken so well about mental health in such a regular interval? I think his talking about mental health is a masterstroke as far as our area is concerned. I can see when I joined at that time and now the Honorable Prime Minister himself speaking, regularly addressing students, is something unique in the world, I would say. That has extraordinary impact on the children. So, and the parents and everybody who listens, because if the Prime Minister of the country speaks, they understand how important it is, how sensitivity you have to handle these issues. So I think this is a very important aspect from a leader like him to understand, and that also shows his nature of being so emotionally sensitive to his citizens, you know, of the country. So that shows the caring attitude of the Prime Minister, that shows the emotional warmth he has in personality. Only then you can have all this, what he does.
And what's commendable is the manner in which he personalizes his experiences with the people.
It's brilliant.
So for our listeners, let's listen into how the Prime Minister deals with issues like this, but at the same time, how he relates it to his personal experiences, not just for better outreach, but also for the maximum impact that it can have on citizens of all age groups across the country.
मैं भी इंसान हूँ, मुझे भी सब कुछ हुआ जो होना था, लेकिन मुझे मालूम था मैं एक ऐसे पद पर बैठा हूँ कि मुझे मेरे इमोशंस को, मेरी ये जो नेचुरल टेंडेंसी मनुष्य की होती है, उन सबसे बाहर रहना होगा, सबसे ऊपर रहना होगा, और जो भी कर सकता हूँ करके मैंने कोशिश की अपने आप को संभालने की.
So Dr. Garg, you heard the Prime Minister on how what he does to cope up with the loss. Crisis, be it of any kind, be it personal, be it collective, be it at a humanitarian larger level, they often leave deep emotional scars. So we are in the news industry, we do it quite often, but it does stay with us in our heads as well. So even when after a lot of days, we recall that particular story because we are stuck there. And it does have an impact on us as well, of course, for the common citizens as well, who don't have to deal with this on a daily basis. I'm sure the impact is much, much greater. How do you think individuals in our country can build greater resilience and the ability to cope better with such crises and loss?
Build a good support system. We as individuals cannot handle everything on our own. No one is a superhero. And we need to have a good support system around us. We need to surround ourselves with our family. We need to surround ourselves with friends. We need to surround ourselves with people who we feel are non-judgmental, who listen to us, who will provide us good advice. And even if someone doesn't provide advice, having a shoulder to cry on, having a person around you who just listens to you without passing any judgments goes a long way in managing your stress. I find it personally very useful and I recommend it to everyone. And people are there. Don't feel that you are alone. If you seek support, you will get support from your friends, from your family, and even from professionals as well. Even this program that we are doing, the conversation that the Prime Minister has, such words of support, such words of knowledge, of awareness, they also go a long way in improving our resilience.
I agree, because not just schools and workplaces, media plays a very, very important role in creating that supportive ecosystem that we are talking about in context of mental wellness. Dr. Vora, before we wrap up the conversation, are there any suggestions, particularly on some simple everyday steps that individuals can take to manage stress and nurture a positive mental health?
First is regular 8 hours night sleep. Second is just keep mentally yourself off after your office or school hours. Relax adequately. Do not keep your emotions bottled up. Share it with somebody. Go for yoga, pranayama, meditation. All these things are very good. If just pick up any sort of physical activity which you like, which peps you up. It could be any sport. It could be gymming. It could be exercise of any sort. And be positive. Always get surrounded by people who are positive. And be optimistic. And have faith in God.
Absolutely. So on that positive note, we'll also wrap up the conversation. Thank you once again, Dr. Vora and Dr. Garg, for this wonderful conversation with us and our listeners. If not all, at least even if we follow 2 to 3 in our everyday lives, I'm sure our mental health will be much more better and positive to look at. We'll be much more positive people. Thank you once again for joining us in this conversation.
You were listening to a special discussion on World Mental Health Day, Mental Wellness, a Modern Day Necessity. The participants were Dr. Sandeep Vora and Dr. Bhavuk Garg, senior psychiatrist. Moderator was Tina Jha, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the New Services Division of Akashwani.
Come
करंट अफेयर्स।